Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
The show is brought to you with Levi Solicitors. You can get 10% discount on your legal fees when you go to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Hello, my name is Dan Moylan, and with me, Michael Normanson.
Hello.
And so is Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
If you want to get all our podcasts ad-free, including early access to the Match Ball, so you can enjoy our immediate delighted reaction to games like the Crawley match that we had recently, early access to the Match Ball comes as part of TSB Plus. In amongst all that, you get a daily email written by Moscow's fair hand and a full digital sub, so you can keep right up to date with TSB, the magazine, the current issue, and all the way back to all the ones that we've ever done back towards 2009 when things were a real hoot. If you want to get involved in that, have a look at thesquareball.net/plus. These are always fun ones to do when we've had a few days to digest things like what happened at Crawley. Another one just to chalk off on the shit list.
I think I've got more annoyed by this the longer I've thought about it. Why? It wasn't even one we can write off as being a bad pitch or an unlucky goal that we had all the pressure. Like, they beat us 3-0 and just probably deserved to win 3-0. And that's not really very nice.
They didn't deserve anything. They don't deserve anything. They deserve to be closed down. I don't like Crawley. I didn't like them before the game. Didn't like them during the game. Not like them after the game.
Why didn't you like them during the game?
Because they were winning.
Oh, okay. No, that's fair enough. I was annoyed by that bit too.
Yeah, it upset me that they were better than my team that I like. And they ended up winning, and it was annoying. Also, a special shout out for Marine. Thanks for fucking nothing.
Yeah.
We didn't ask much.
That is the one thing that could have taken the heat off us, isn't it? But
could they?
No. Not interested at all. Were
nope.
Come up with a theory in the wake of this defeat about Bielsa and the fact that he doesn't quite yet understand, he doesn't have a handle on how the cups work in this country to a certain extent, that I think he kind of thinks you can do just enough to get through and put out a strong enough side. But I don't think he's got a big enough data set yet for working out the levelling factors of the cup, such as, you know, Crawley will play the game of their life. And then if we're a bit subpar, like we were, quite a lot subpar, slightly weakened side, that it really does make things a lot more difficult for you.
Are you going to suggest he should resign, as Adrian Durham said, I mean, over one game?
If you're going to troll us, at least put some effort into trolling us, Adrian, because that's shit. I've got no reaction to it because it's just so ludicrous.
Yeah, he's still got. Yeah, maybe he should.
Yeah, he should. Yeah, I'm sick of the fact that he got us promoted, a club that couldn't, you know, get those shackles off itself for a decade and a half. I'm livid at the man.
I don't know if he just has more faith in some players than he should, maybe, in that he thinks he sees enough of Casey and Jenkins in training and thinks, no, they can do it. But it is a very different scenario, isn't it? Like, we'll come on to it in a bit, but having watched the under-23s yesterday, they all look brilliant in that. Like, you'd watch that game and think, not a problem. This lot could probably beat Crawley.
Talk about it now, because we're talking about it.
They were just all really good. Like, we absolutely dominated Burnley, start to finish. Greenwood looked brilliant. Down the wings, we were incredibly dangerous. You'd look at Somerville, we got a hat-trick yesterday, and say, well, he'd be absolutely fine slotting straight into the first team, particularly if he's coming in place of Helder Costa, who was terrible in this. But the reality is, he probably wouldn't be that good if he came in.
I was looking through the photos from this game, and there's one of Jamie Shackleton, who's played, you know, a lot of games now in the Premier League, a decent amount, sort of being palmed off he's got a hand in the chest by some non-league brutes. And there was quite a few when we were watching the game.
It's worth mentioning.
Yeah, but when we were watching the game, we were looking at some of the close-ups of their players. I think it was the guy who booted the ball in Alioski's face. And he had a very non-league face. Just that foot. You know what I mean. And you don't come up against those kind of players in the under-23s.
I don't know. Burnley's team seemed to have a few of them yesterday. Yeah,
okay.
But they were young.
In Lancashire, perhaps. The Lancashire exception. Yeah, but they are young. But yes, so you're talking, 28, 29-year-old hard bastards who are playing the biggest game of their lives. And I think somebody like Shackleton or Greenwood or who else, Casey Jenkins, who kind of are used to a more sedate atmosphere around the under-23s games. People have been saying it for a long time, under-23s football does not prepare you for what the first team is like, and it certainly doesn't prepare you for what Crawley's like. And I don't think Bielsa is not unique for falling into that trap of thinking this team should be good enough to beat those. It's basically that's how teams get knocked out of the FA Cup in the third round these days. It's not like, the golden old days before they removed the maximum wage, when you used to have good players in Division 4 and, teams would actually be decent at lower levels. Now there is such a disparity that if it's Manchester City's first team versus Crawley, Man City's first team are going to win. And it's always that little bet of like, is he going to rest a couple of players? Will a couple of youth players come in? And will those be the weaknesses? And the level to which Bielsa took that, particularly at halftime, is where we went wrong.
I was mentioning this on the match ball, actually, and I don't think I quite managed to distill it into the correct thought, but I think that sort of feeds into it there, Moscow. It's like Bielsa's scientific approach. It is so scientific that I think he almost sees it like an equation or a formula where you can apply it to any given match. And while he knows it doesn't work every time, I think he thinks it would work or is likely to work because he's not infallible. He admits he makes mistakes, but I think he thinks he's done enough with his approach and with the players available to win any given match. And it doesn't always translate into the truth, doesn't it? That was what I was talking about when I was on the match ball about like real world conditions versus the scientific way that Bielsa kind of breaks a match down.
That's the point of football, isn't it?
I think part of the substitutions as well was that they were planned, weren't they? That it didn't take any account of the game. We could have been 3-up or 3-down, or as we were, 0-0, and he would have still made those changes because he didn't want to risk Cooper getting injured again. He wanted to give Stryker rest, and it was those changes that killed us. Because the first half, for as much as we weren't brilliant, we also didn't feel in any great danger. Like, it felt like Cooper was pretty much dealing with everything. It all felt, if a little bit stilted and lacking the sort of urgency and fluidity we normally have, it was fine.
What it needed at halftime instead of those changes was to say, right, first half, 0-0, you've got 15 minutes, go out there, beat them so I can make these changes I wanted to make now. And that's, if we'd kept the same team for the first 15 minutes of the second half with the instructions, get this game fucking won, I think we would have had a very different outcome. It needed Cooper in particular, but Stroik, and it was Rodrigo who went off as well. It needed those three down the spine of the team, because that was the other big thing about it. It was Greenwood going to 10 and Jenkins as the defensive midfielder, Casey as centre-back. It's the spine of the team. It's the three probably the most important positions.
And Jack Harrison.
On the pitch. And then, and Jack Harrison wandering into a completely odd scenario. So from front to back, we were completely weakened, leaving aside the goalkeeper that started. If we just stuck with the strongest team that we started with for 15 more minutes, but with that extra impetus of get this game finished because we're better than this. And
get it finished and you can have a rest.
Yeah, basically. And I wanted, and there's some, it's a bit old school, but there's some leverage there to say, I wanted to make these changes at halftime. You lot haven't done what I asked you to of winning this game. Get it won now so I can bring them on like I wanted to and don't fuck up my plans. But instead, Bielsa stuck to the plan and it all went wrong. And it's true as well that the goals, two in 3 minutes within 10 minutes of half time, adds to that feeling that we started the second half with nobody really knowing what the fuck they were doing. And the first things, I think we said it in the match ball, and you try not to pick on him, but it's just the situation that he came into the first couple of times Jenkins was on the ball, he gave it away, which, it's his debut. He's gonna, if he'd come on with half an hour to go and we were 2-0 up, he may have had an easier time of like getting his first couple of passes right, and then we're better. We were just completely disorganised in those 15 minutes, and everything to me just says if we just have waited to make those changes, we would have been looking forward to Bournemouth away.
That second goal as well, I think that Jenkins' role in that is a bit of an issue as well, because it's Davies coming out on the left and Jenkins is the pass that he should play, and he has a little look and thinks, not so sure, and he plays it instead to Jack Harrison, who's further up the pitch, and not the pass isn't really on, and then it gets intercepted and there's a ball over the top and they score from it. And it is about having a confidence in everyone on the pitch, isn't it? Which is probably something we'll come on to when we talk about Kiko as well. If you've seen someone lose the ball a couple of times, you maybe are hesitant to give it to them again, and then it forces you into some other bad decisions.
Were we a bit unfair to Kiko?
No, he's shit.
On the match ball. Is everyone being unfair now?
No.
I'm only asking that from a pure...
As a one-off.
Devil's advocate.
If this had been Capriel making his debut, I'd be sort of defending him a bit. But we've seen enough of Kiko, and he earns enough money that, when he's old enough, that he's due all the criticism he gets, because it needs to be better. And there's no point saying he can't be that bad. He's won three Champions League. He has. Well, apart from anything else, I'm sick of hearing that, because he hasn't won. He's played as many minutes in Champions League finals as I have.
All right, Brian Clough, steady on.
It's true, though. He has played...
Throw those medals in
he
the
has
bin.
Played 0 minutes in Champions League finals. I know he's got three medals, but...
Same as Harry Kiel.
But he has done nothing in those finals, so he does not deserve them.
It was all a long time ago as well. He is completely busted. I think this game proved it. He's busted as a top-level footballer. It made me think, somebody put a tweet out about kind of the goalkeeping mindset and switching from not playing, which is basically what he does all the time, to playing. And it reminded me that it's something we actually flagged up about the Charlton away game, where people may remember he called their striker a fucking N-word. But even before he'd done that, we lost that game because of an absolutely ludicrous Kiko Casilla mistake. The ball from a corner came into the 6 yard box, and he tried to punch a ball that was about 3 feet off the air, 3 yards off his line, as if it was 10 feet in the air on the edge of the penalty area. He completely flips his legs out behind him and does this kind of as if he's diving into a pond, and punches it about 3 yards to their striker, who puts in. And I remember saying at the time, in a kind of a positive view of maybe he'll get used to it, trying to think of when was the last time he had been in a crowded 6 yard box in a competitive match with people running towards him, bearing down on him, and the ball's there. And it would have been months, if not years, since he had faced that kind of thing in a competitive match. And so his reactions and his mental responses to these things just aren't there. And at the time, it was like, well, you know, we had him second half of the previous season, and then the Derby playoffs happened, and then he's come back, and this is the year where it's like, no, I'm going to be the number one, and I'll commit to it, and I'll improve. And it was October, so it's still quite early days. And the way we were talking about it then was he needs to go through these situations, and maybe the more that it happens and the more competitive football he actually plays, the better he'll become. Didn't happen, did it? He just got worse and worse. And now every time he pops up, he's just, well, he did what he did on Saturday. Not, you know, there was one good save. We did talk about it. And there is a bobble on the second one, but I think Melier saves it.
And the second one, we've seen that goal several times with him, haven't we? You can only, if there's an isolated incident, you can say it's hit a bobble. But then when you've seen that people scoring from that impossible angle multiple times against him, it becomes a weakness of his.
Yeah, and then the third one is very similar to that Charlton goal, where he just kind of, it's a save, and it just goes to one of their players and goes in, which always seems to happen to him. And then there's the one where he's, for some reason, he decided to put Oliver Casey in goal for a while, and he was going to go and play upfield, which again is something that we've seen before. So, you know, if anybody is listening to this and they are 34, I don't mean to write you off, but he's not going to improve from this point. And I would, although one of the things that let us down in this game was the number of young players who didn't have the experience to deal with the situation, I think we would make an exception for the goalkeeper, and I would stick Ilya Capriel in if Melier's not available, just because we may as well let him learn from his mistakes, if he makes any, than have somebody in making mistakes, which it's pointless. You know, the only value in a mistake is that you learn from it and you do better next time. That's why Melier can be defended for anything he gets wrong, and he has got quite a few things wrong this season. He needs to learn to, like, save a header in front of the line and not take it backwards with him into the net. But he's got 15 years of football ahead of him, in which he can apply the things that he learns from this season, as does Ilya Kuprel, if he makes a mistake, he can be better next time. There's really no point in trying to teach Kiko Kassir anything, because even if he does learn from this mistake, who is it going to benefit? Fucking Zaragoza B or whoever fucking signs him and sticks him in their third team.
The fact is, he should have gone ages ago. I mean, the several points at which he should have gone, he should quite possibly have gone after the Derby game when he'd had several mistakes in a row, but he stuck around. He should definitely have gone after the racism stuff was all confirmed and he was found guilty of that. But yet we continue playing him and watching him make more mistakes. So as much as I don't feel particularly inclined to give him a lump sum for someone who has been found guilty of a racism offence and awful, it's probably time, isn't it, to just say, let's just get rid of him. And if we have to pay him half of his wages or two thirds of his wages for him to go and play for Osasuna or someone who does actually want him, just fucking do it, because there's no point. And it creates such negative feeling as well. Like, you sense it when you see him on a team sheet, everyone goes, Jesus Christ. And you sense it amongst fans and players, because Liam Cooper won't give the ball to him.
And there's no way back from that. It's a busted flush. There is no way back for him.
I mean, the incident where he's come out of his goal, like, that's what he's done over and over again. He's what he did against Derby, did it against Ipswich in the couple of games before the Derby game. He's an idiot. His mind is not correct on those things. He obviously is seeing something developing that isn't on for him, but he continually thinks, I'm going to get to this.
I do wonder if, going back to what Moscow was saying then about, you know, not being switched on to the job at hand, if he's maybe just become so conditioned to being on the bench and actually he prefers it. He prefers being a non-playing reserve goalkeeper.
He's given it a go. I think he's come the transfer route. We remember Bielsa saying, you know, this is great that we've managed to attract a goalkeeper from Real Madrid. And if he had come from Real Madrid and said, right, I don't think he was there as long as sometimes we think it was. I think it was about 5 or 6 seasons. And he was number one at, he was at Espanyol before that, wasn't he? So he has played football. And if his attitude was right, and I think it probably was, I'll come to England, I'll be number one, I'm not going to sit on the bench anymore, I'm going to be a first choice goalkeeper, and the rest of my career is going to be a good thing. We'll get promoted into the Premier League and I'll be a Premier League first choice goalkeeper. Absolutely fine. It's not worked. He needs to fuck off. Because he doesn't even play in the under-23s. And so there is no opportunity for him to get that consistency, that match practice.
The Papa John's, he's played in that this season.
I mean, and yeah, it's...
The wise old head.
It just, he benefits nobody by being here.
Let's move on to propaganda then. A bit of a struggle, this one, I presume, given that it's bloody Crawley Town.
The documentary's not out yet, is it?
Well, no part of it is.
It doesn't include this game, though, does it?
I only watched the first bit just to see... part of the reason I watched the first bit was to see how this narrative is adding up about this was always going to happen. He's definitely was going to sign...
Mark Wright, you're talking about?
Yes, for Mark Wright, obviously. The documentary is about Mark Wright. It's called...
Mr. Michelle Keaton.
It's called...
The Only Way is Crawley?
Something like that, yeah. I've got no other work, so I'm doing this, is what it's called.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 30th of November is when the third round draw is. The 8th of December is when the Leeds-Crawley game is to be televised, and he basically signs then. Coincidence, maybe. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe it was always on the cards for him. But there's an obvious contrived phone call as well with him on his like first day to training. When the manager's ringing me when I'm in the car. I'll answer this. And it's the manager saying, you deserve this. You're a really good player and stuff. He's thinking, fuck off. But I did also find this was an interview on Crawley's own channel that they did, like their own YouTube thing. And it's about him signing for them and why he's signing for them. And you can really sense his passion for the job in this.
Probably continuing into next year, I'm not going to be able to travel and do much of the job I'm used to. So to get my head down and play football again, it's a dream come true.
He can't do his normal job.
His normal job is to do shows on Heart on the radio, isn't it?
No, he's still doing that, in fairness, but it means like he does like showbiz stuff and celebrity nonsense. And he can't do that anymore, so he's doing football.
I have also done shows on Heart. I did a bit at Heart Yorkshire for a year.
Are you going to sign for Crawley?
I'm just saying, me and Mark, me and Wrighty, basically the same, aren't we?
He did say in the documentary he had to work on his fitness. I think you may have to work harder on your fitness if you were to be a professional footballer inside 2 months.
Well, you're fat shaming me now.
I'm just saying, Mark Wright was always in fairly decent shape, wasn't he?
He's a handsome enough lad.
But he does go on then to explain why his football career, this lifelong dream of his, didn't happen the first time. And it's all too common amongst young footballers, I'm sure.
Let me guess. Did he get an injury?
Nope.
This really is my last chance. And I've been wanting to do it for the last 10 years since I quit. I think I signed for another club, actually, in the Conference South a year after I quit. And I couldn't play for them because I went into the jungle like a week after I signed. So, you know, it's weird. I've tried to juggle football as much as I can around the world that I'm in. It's not managed to work. But now I'm willing to give it one go, put my work on the back burner and put everything into this last, potentially last year of football at Crawley, the club where I left off as well. So it's kind of a fitting moment.
That's actually the same reason why my contract didn't get renewed at Heart, because I had to go off and do I'm a Celeb as well.
In the jungle.
Yeah.
It's the way you phrase it, though. It's always amuses me when he says, I couldn't do it because I had to go into the jungle.
Like the Vietnam War with Pablo.
Whereas the truth is, I couldn't do it because I was making a television programme. That's what happened.
He could have said, if he was bothered about his football career, could have said no to the jungle.
And the thing is about, you know, oh, I had to go into the jungle, oh, woe is me. I don't particularly like doing this, it's that tabloid thing, but when I was researching him, and Google always says it's either thinks you want to know who their wife is, but in this case it's Michelle Keegan, so that's old news, or net worth, that's where it was, to put anybody's name in, net worth. 10 million quid, apparently. This is very, his other job is property. He's property developing to make money and doing very well out of it, which is absolutely fine, but I don't like... On the one hand, we had John Yems all last week going, oh, wouldn't it be great if Leeds gave us safe? And it was a matter of apparently £37,500 is what Leeds made.
John Yems, I was enjoying that.
If they gave us...
Where's he from?
He's just a south.
What was he saying?
He was harassing us constantly. Harassing us for this 37 grand that he wants out of Leeds. And then we've got this idle rich substitute who the only reason he is actually out there, I'm surprised he didn't come onto the pitch with a top hat and a cane. Yeah, what the hell, boys? I just thought I'd buy myself onto the substitute's bench, but he's actually done it for free. I hope they're not paying him. If our £37,000 goes into this guy's back pocket for his appearance bonus for coming off the bench against us in the cup, then we should be having the TV fees off Crawley.
The reason I didn't get my contract renewed at Heart is because they forgot about me. You know that? Sort of impact I made. Anyway, well, he's earned it anyway, hasn't he, as old righty?
I know there's going to be a lot of backlash from this because it's the nature of the world we live in. I'm from one world. People don't know that. I mean, the Crawley fans hopefully will remember me here, so they'll be okay with it. But a lot of people are obviously going to shrat away and be like, what? What's going on? But I'm here to play football and get my head down. And I've been doing it for the last 2 months and... Feeling as fit as ever. So, yeah, this bring on this challenge.
2 months he's put into it, so deserves it, doesn't he?
And it would make more sense if he'd started the game or something. If he'd worked hard for 2 months and really impressed and was out there and he's, you know, he's the game changer. But you can't pretend this is anything other than a cynical publicity stunt when he's brought on for the last minute when the 3-0 up. Didn't even bring him on for the last 20 minutes when that game was won. That's how little faith they have in his two months of hard work. He can't have been that fucking good, can he?
And in the previous 2 months, how many minutes has he appeared for them?
Absolutely nothing. Well, they had to save the debut for this, didn't they? Otherwise, it's not a story. And it's sometimes people misuse that thing of like, oh, it's the way of the world that people, I'm going to get a backlash from this. It's not the way of the world. It's because you're doing something stupid.
And taking away a substitute's place from someone who has been trying to do this for longer. Almost certainly better.
Some young lad who's been kicked out of an academy and maybe higher up or whatever, he's been falling down the football pyramid. This is his genuine last chance to make it in football. He's there 365 days a year. He's not just showing up for 2 months of it. And putting all the work in and he thinks, oh, fine, I get to play. I get to be on the bench against Premier League Leeds. This is my chance. Maybe I can make an impression with the TV cameras on me, and you never know what that impression will lead to if I do something good.
And who won't fuck off if Strictly Come Dancing are on the phone and you just go, ah, well, I know it was my dream and everything, the old football, but actually, I get to be on like I'm doing a celebrity taxidermy thing on Channel 5, so that's the football. I'll come back next year for the football. If I've nothing better on, I'll come back again.
If you get a big team in the cup.
Yeah, obviously. Not coming back for fucking Bradford away.
Bielsa's Leeds blundered in the FA Cup. Now they'll close ranks and recover. So says Phil Hay. this week on The Athletic. Is he right?
Terminal decline. That's what I'm predicting.
Is it going to be like Cardiff 2002?
That's it.
It's over for us now.
Yep, League One again within a couple of years.
I think he's failed to factor in Adrian Durham going in there and dragging Bielsa out by his tracksuit.
Catch up with that and everything that Phil Hay has written this week on The Athletic, and you can sign up using our discount code as well, where you can read all Phil's stuff, all the football stuff, all the sports stuff from around the world. Details at theathletic.com/thesquareball. Not news we wanted to hear about today, but the news about Saul Bamba having a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Shite, isn't it?
That is shite. He was a good one with Saul. I always quite liked him. He went in a time of absolutely dismal footballers for Leeds. He was good and he was fun at times. And he chased Belushi around a car park, apparently, which was, I think, it's not quite statue territory, but I think it's getting there.
If you need to push him towards a statue, it was the night he spent marching around the end of season awards dinner, basically getting in the faces of all our club executives and telling them off, which was probably his finest moment in a way. Like, as good as anything he did on the pitch was just that idea that he actually gave a damn about the club, which was always the thing that was missing during the years. When he turned up, suddenly a player with an opinion on what was happening at Leeds United and the front to actually say it out loud, and then the front to say it to the people who were in charge, was all just absolutely perfect.
He was sort of a proto Pontus in a way, wasn't he? He was that first figure that you kind of latched onto and thought, I quite like you, rather than all these generic identical midfielders. You're a guy who has a little bit of something about you.
I mean, his friendship with Warnock should be a mark against him, of course, because we can't really be having that, but I'm sure he just humoured Colin, I would imagine.
I always take it because remember Berardi always spoke well of Belushi, and I think sometimes you've got to say it's a marker of Bamba and Berardi that they can see the good in these people rather than anything else. Warnock has commented on this because dear old Sharon has been through chemotherapy herself over the last couple of years, so Neil Warnock has offered Saul Bamba some of her second-hand wicks, which I'm not sure is necessarily the support Saul was looking for, but I'm sure he'll take it well.
Returning to what you were on about before, Michael, the under-23s, they are doing quite well against other children, aren't they? But do you see Sam Greenwood having a little minor pop via socials?
No, I didn't see that.
He quote-tweeted LUFC tweeting about his goal. Just sort of it was a kind of a side-eye. Just a little bit of a look at this.
Emojis are very open to interpretation. There was, I think it was a kind of a grin face, and then there was a shush face. So it could have been absolutely anybody.
It was
just
not
kind of saying, people say, I can't do this, I have done this. I don't think there wasn't like an Argentinian flag in there or anything, and or a cup of mate tea to say he was slagging off. Because that's the way it's been interpreted. It's immediately gone, oh, he's slagging off Bielsa for playing him as a 10 instead of as a striker. He was playing as a 10 in this game. It was Bobby Camwell was the striker, who I don't think is a striker. And it's almost as if we use the under-23s to play players out of position so that they learn more about playing in different positions. Why that translated to the FA Cup, Greenwood not playing as a striker at Crawley is a little bit of a mystery, but I don't think it's necessarily something that Sam Greenwood's two emoji tweets. It's a difficult tweet to interpret accurately. You'd have to ask him.
The goal itself was not particularly good. It was quite, I think it was twice deflected on the way in, so maybe it was to do with that. I don't know.
It's just fine. He's just wanting to tweet a goal of himself, and just there's probably a little bit of swagger in it of like, you know, shush to my haters. And that could include like the girl who like turned him down when he was 14, didn't want to go to prom with him or whatever. It could be absolutely fucking anybody. That's as likely a theory as him sending a message to Bielsa in that weird, that's that weird passive sense that you keep seeing in clickbait tweets. But it's a Greenwood message sent.
Tell you what, Moscow,
I don't even know what this means.
I'd hate to cross you when you've got disses like that in your locker. That's for my haters. Wow. You really know to shut a man down.
But we didn't actually play any grown-ups in this either, which is rare, because normally we've had the under-23s, but then there's been Pablo or Rodrigo or someone in there. This was a full team of children.
We should emphasise as well that Burnley had a proper keeper in goal as well. They didn't use Bailey Peacock Farrell, so those four were actually well scored. We had to try.
He must be said, have touches of the Bailey Peacock Farrells about him.
And when Somerville, when he dribbled around, what was it, four players, it did look a little bit easy. But I mean, you could tell one of the people who played in the Eredivisie, and the three he was going past were probably at school that morning.
Hey, good on little Jimmy anyway, because he's failed to really make an impact since he's arrived because of his injuries or whatever, hasn't he? So it's nice to see him hitting a bit of form.
And it is still good that the under-23s are good. We just have to accept that there's a reason the entire first 11 isn't made up of under-23s. It's because in every year you get a player, or every 2 years you get a player who is good enough for it. And that's fine, because that's just the way these things work when you're a good side, and you need to actually have a top level of player in your team, that you don't get one. You don't get a full 11 every season who are just brilliant, do you?
And we are doing all right out of it with Shax is in the first team, and who was it? Pascal Stroik has come from there and is a regular fill-in. So it's working as it should in that respect. Even Melier, if you like, because he did spend a lot of last season playing for them, getting ready to take over as number one ahead of time. But it's doing the job that Bielsa really wants, where he says, I want two first choices and then under-23s to fill in. So the fact that Stroik and Shackleton are there is already a good thing. And then we'll see whether Greenwood, Joffe, Somerville, Drama, Charlie Creswell, whether Ollie Casey steps up. It's all in the future, and it will probably be one or two of them at most. And it will probably be for quite a while, because you look at somebody like Tyler Roberts, who's still only 21, despite him being around for ages, and he's still got his future ahead of him at another club.
Oh, bless him.
Drama finished this one with a Paddy Kisnobo tribute bandage on as well, because he got shoved into the advertising boards in the last minute, and it didn't look like a massive impact, but I can only assume...
We're not classing it as a brutal assault.
Well, it was an attempted murder. Was it Ferguson once said that about someone attempted to kill someone, or it could have been killed? But yeah, because I think Burnley have still got the 1950s of health and safety there. I think it was probably bits of nails hanging out of the advertising boards or something. He managed to cut his head and was down for quite a while, but hopefully he's all right.
Yeah, talking about Tyler Roberts, wasn't in the squad against Crawley. There's this weird, mysterious silence, and Leeds have created an issue where they didn't need to create an issue. There seems to be some wall of silence around why he's not in the squad, and we are left with the two conclusions of either he's going somewhere else, be it Bournemouth, Cardiff, Derby, whoever, or he's had COVID or is isolating or whatever. Why don't they just tell us? Why? What's going on with the mystery?
It does seem weird. There's not a particular shame around having COVID at the moment, is there? There's quite a bit around. It's fine to just say someone's got it, therefore he's just doing his own thing for a couple of weeks. He'll be back soon.
There's also no actual requirement for them to.
If they're trying to remove a level of speculation from this. If they don't want to sell him and he's got COVID, just saying he's got COVID would be a way of stopping all that. But it feels like it's a mystery when it doesn't necessarily need to be.
Yeah, creating one where one doesn't need to exist.
Because
yeah.
He surely would have, if he was available, he surely would have been in the squad for the Crawley game, you would have thought.
So you are led to the conclusion he's unavailable for some reason. So just, you know, tell us what it is, and stops idiots like us talking about it.
Yeah, I think it's that the idiocy side of it is where I always wonder, because Leeds United effectively aren't doing anything, and that's fine. It's not their fault that then speculation grows where nothing exists.
No, but that's not true, because you know nature abhors a vacuum, doesn't it?
They've said
people will fill the silence with something, which is what we're doing now.
Bielsa has said he is unavailable.
So thank you.
He said before the game he's unavailable, and then that's enough. Anything else is just kind of fantasy land. He could be trapped in a zoo. There you go. Read that on Football Insider.
What does Danny Mills think about him being trapped in a zoo?
That is another bit we need to add to this podcast as a feature. If and when we inevitably run out of ideas for what's wrong with the Premier League, Danny Mills has a shit opinion. That can be a thing, can't it? Oh, well, maybe we could name it in honour of Karen Carney.
Danny Mills very literally describes a zoo. Well, there seem to be animals in enclosures, and some of them look happy, some of them not so much, and some of the ones that the nocturnal animals are kept inside in the dark.
Oh, the monkeys wanking there in front of some school children.
Yep.
Oh, don't look at that, children. Look over there. Oh, and he's pissing in his own mouth. That's the monkey, I mean, not Danny Mills.
That cage, that's just not sustainable. Yeah, I mean, Tigers, they want to be free. And, you know, you put them in captivity for a certain amount of time. You might enjoy looking at them, but they'll get out and eat people.
Your accents are my favourite thing, I think, about this entire shambles of a podcast.
I never claimed to be good at them. You know who that was an impression of anyway, don't you?
Steve Nicol.
Yeah, so it can't have been that bad.
The fact we've had to explain that just for the avoidance of doubt. Anyway, Ryan Edmondson, is there a zoo in Aberdeen? Is he trapped?
No, he's not.
Full of seagulls.
He's come back, hasn't he? They've sent him back, or we've got him back. It's not. I think we've taken him back, haven't we? Because he's not really playing for him. He just comes off the bench for 5 minutes at a time.
They wanted to keep him, was the word on the granite streets of Aberdeen.
It's not the word from their forum.
Well, no.
Which forum is this and what have they been saying about our boy?
AFC chat. They weren't very impressed. Pish was one word. The most Scottish word.
What does that mean? Can you translate?
It's pish. Well, that's Phil when he gets here.
He drinks it, doesn't he?
Are we back onto the monkeys in zoos?
4 cans of Tennet Super that he brought in for you two still on the shelf in here.
Yeah, I haven't taken those home. I don't know how I would explain it to my wife.
But yeah, there were a few people saying he's not very good. But then he's hardly played. And we've had this before with loanees, haven't you? You get people who turn up and don't ever play or don't do particularly well when they do play, and then they go on to have good enough careers elsewhere. So we'll see.
It's impressive knowledge from the Aberdeen Forum that somebody says good news that he's leaving. I'll wager he'll end up playing for Harrogate or the likes. You know, they've checked out the Yorkshire candidates and picked one.
It's worse than that for him, though, because Bradford wants him. So he might be going there to join...
Bryce Hosanna.
That's the man.
And they took Jordan Stevens as well after John Sheridan wasn't happy about the way he was at
Did he describe him
Swindon.
As pish?
He didn't. He said he needs to, it's something about he needs to get it into his head that he's got a big chance at a big club. I did wonder, it had the sound about it with Shez that he's maybe ranted at him about when he was at Leeds and Billy Bremner was his manager and it's a huge club and, you know, you need to... You're not good enough for that opportunity.
You need to take basically. It seriously, like I did.
I did.
Rocking in pissed every day.
I had Mondays off training, and unless you get that into your head, you'll never amount to. This doesn't make any sense.
I didn't frequently go out on a Friday night. That's what you need to do.
Weekend matches on a Sunday. Have you got a brother? Does he play non-league? Go play for his team on a Sunday. Otherwise, you'll never make it. That's the, if anybody doesn't know that John Sheridan story, he played against, I think it was the Police in Manchester, came on at half-time for his brother's team and was absolutely brilliant. The referee, who was a local scout, came up to me at the end and says, oh, you're really good. I could get you a trial with some clubs in Manchester if you want. He's like, oh, no, he's all right. He's an Irish international. Time playing every week for Leeds United in Division 2. Mm-hmm. But and then to celebrate that victory, he went out on the piss and didn't get back to Leeds until like halfway through the week. But Billy Bremner adored him and so just let him do it.
Just let it slide. Julian Draxler, do you want him?
Yeah, all right.
He sounds like a Bond villain with that name, but I'm prepared to tolerate that.
He's good, isn't he? I mean, this has come from via Fabrizio Romano, who's kind of an international Jim White, isn't he? The transfer window seems to be what he lives for. But, I mean, they paid $42 million for him. And he's also said that we'd have him on loan, but, you know, so would probably about another 50 clubs in the world.
Did we see the reverse PSG transfer news where
yes.
on Mauricio Pochettino's list of incoming players yes. was one Jamie Shackleton?
Not Jack Clark.
No, it was Shaq's.
Has he not been queuing up straight away to get Clark out there, no?
He could take Clark as well, reunite the pair of them. Because there wasn't it at one point, I can never remember whose, but somebody's sister was going out with one of them. It was either Jack Clark was going out with Shaq's sister or Shaq's sister was going out with Jack Clark. I never knew how that ended up. You know, I mean, maybe they're all still together and they're very happy. Not all of them still together, obviously. Whoever is together out of that combination.
I hope they're happy.
I hope they're very happy.
I hope Jamie Shackleton and his sister are very happy together.
And I hope they enjoy
in Paris.
Or moving into a big apartment together in Paris. And if one of them's called Emily, it's a Netflix series and I'm sure it'll be great.
Super. What position does Draxler play?
Attacking midfield.
So it's a straight swap for Jamie Shackleton, basically, isn't it? Maybe that's, fuck Emily, it'll be Jamie in Paris and we'll make a behind-the-scenes documentary about Jamie Shackleton striving to make it Mark Wright style at Paris Saint-Germain.
Jason Knight and Louis Sibley, both 19 years old, both Derby midfielders. Should we have them just out of spite?
I think so. Put them in the reserves.
Yeah, fun. As long as we pay for them with like forged notes. Let Derby think that this is some kind of we're their saviours, and then actually the check bounces. We're after somebody from Wigan as well, aren't we? It's McGurk or McGwerk, their striker. Apparently, we've had a bid knocked back. They can have real money because I don't mind.
I think they need it.
Wigan too much, yeah, and they need it. But Derby, maybe we'll ask for some of their stadium as well, because that's quite valuable. Maybe make them have to break a piece off like a birthday cake and wrap it up and send it to us with the two players. Two players have to carry it on their backs up the M1, drag it.
My mate who has watched Jason Knight play more than me, because he's an Ireland fan and watches their under-21 teams and stuff, says he is a very Bielsa-y kind of player. He gets back and forward a lot and
runs around 5'6".
Runs like mad, and can do attacking and defending stuff at the same time. Let's just have him, eh?
That's some football knowledge for you there, isn't it?
That's a hell of a scouting report.
Louis Sibley, I have no idea.
Louis Sibley sounds like he should be in a boy band.
He's very blonde.
Mm.
That's my report on him.
I could picture it though, like, you know, checking out what's on Louis Sibley's SoundCloud. Whereas we've also got midfielder from Middlesbrough, Marcus Tavernier, being linked, who always just makes me think of drinking mead.
Yeah. I mean, a midfielder that's been schooled by Warnock for a year is going to be just primed to drop into our team, isn't he?
I mean, he had a year under Jonathan Woodgate as well, with Robbie Keane advising. So, I don't know. He's absolutely, yes, ruined, essentially. That's him fucked.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's the Ben White derby on Saturday. Is it winner takes all? Do we get to keep him if we beat him?
Do we want him?
I think we should keep him. Again, another Spite signing if the chance presents itself. I don't care how much it costs us now. We should and we will take him out of principle when they are relegated, and we are not.
I do hope in his contract he had a nice low release clause put in there, just so he can sneak out of there for £8 million at the end of the season and we can laugh.
Could be that one for specific clubs where it's if Leeds come in for him, it's £2 million. If Liverpool want him, it's £200 million. We should sign him just to be Calvin's mate.
Yeah, it is. Happier times over the summer, wasn't it, when you could still go out and they could go on holiday together and have to be accosted by a West Ham fan in a beach bar. He still likes it here, doesn't he? He still retweets and likes all the other players' Instagram stuff, doesn't
we
he?
We have his heart, don't we? We've got his heart and soul is at Leeds.
And I mean, look at Brighton's results. You just draw and lose every game. It's boring. You hardly ever score. You just draw games 1-1.
They beat Newport, the other Ben White's other former love, eventually. It only took them about 7 hours to get to the end of that match, but they sorted them out on penalties.
That was good, actually, to go to extra time in that. Get them nice and tired.
Haven't they got another game? This is Tuesday. Haven't they got a game on Wednesday as well?
Yeah. Is it Man City or someone they're playing?
Yep.
Good.
Took them out. So
they're away. So they've been away to Newport, then to Man City, and then they're coming to Leeds. So they're on the road quite a lot.
It's a long way to anywhere from Brighton.
Yeah. And they're without, I think they've got three or four players who are out, aren't they?
One time Leeds target Danny Welbeck is out injured, which is a shame for him. I mean, I suppose he would have found it awkward having not so nearly signed here.
It's going to start the rumours again, isn't it? Saying he didn't want to play against the club that he really should be signing for.
That's the one. But they're also Terry Lamptey, who's quite good. He's their fullback. he's apparently out, and Connolly is also out, and Lallana. So if they can all continue to be out, and I think Ben White went off injured against Newport as well. Certainly showing signs of injury.
No surprises there. He's not going to want to come and play, is he, at Elland Road? Especially not with Calvin.
That's true. We've done all the scans. Him and Calvin, both out, in fact. So they can just sit. Maybe they can just sit in the south stand together or something.
Well, that would be contravening COVID-19 regulations, wouldn't it? And we've been trying to clamp down on all that stuff.
Maybe Calvin could sit in one of the south stand boxes and Ben White could sit on the outside like he's visiting him in prison. And they could kiss through the glass.
What has he done to end up in prison?
Well, nothing. It's just that I want Calvin to sit in the warm and Ben White can sit in the cold.
Yeah, prison is maybe not the best metaphor. What could we use instead? Just some other scenario where they're separated by plexiglass.
A conservatory showroom.
Exactly.
They're out buying conservatories.
They're out buying a conservatory. Some bifold doors maybe for their house that they live in together, and they can have a kiss through that instead.
It's bifold doors, isn't it? They're very 2021.
Speaking to each other on a telephone.
Like in a prison.
Or a conservatory showroom. Either or.
It's definitely a prison. Are we going to beat them?
Brighton are weak at protecting the lead, so we can let them score and still win.
I'd rather we didn't.
They're also weak at aerial duels, so we can beat them in the air. So that's the thing. We need to get some Warnock tactics on the go for this one. They're very strong at stealing the ball from the opposition, but we just keep the ball, so that's not going to happen.
That's how we ended up in prison, isn't it? Stealing.
And they're also strong at coming back from losing positions, which I wonder if that's related to their weakness at protecting the lead. So it sounds like we'll go ahead, but they're weak at protecting the lead. So we'll equalise and then we'll take the lead. But because they're strong at coming back from losing positions, they'll equalise, but they're not very strong at it, so they won't take the lead again. Unless they do take the lead again, and that's our opportunity because they're weak at protecting it, to go back ahead. I think it's going to end up about 9-8 to us.
What is he on about?
Okay. I mean, I was fairly confident about this until we got absolutely spanked by Crawley. Nah. But we'll have proper players back for this, won't we?
Yeah, we've got this. It's fine. We care about the Premier League, don't we?
Yeah, one of the things in Phil Hayes' joke of an article about Crawley that we advertised before was that Llorente might be back for this one, that they were he might have been in line for an appearance at Crawley, but they... he was in line for appearance for the under-23s at this Burnley match, but they pulled him out of that with the idea that we might need him against Brighton. So we could have a Spanish international at the back, because that always works out well for us. And hopefully there'll be absolutely no question marks over who plays in goal for this game, because there's been no
rumours
about the health of our first choice goalkeeper whatsoever, so we can all be very comfortable.
Maybe we could send him out there anyway, but behind the plexiglass that Michael was on about before.
Put him in a bubble, just a protective bubble around Melier. I mean, I think he should. Obviously, we don't know if there's any truth whatsoever in this rumour about him having COVID-19, but if he does, I'm livid, because if there's one player that we needed to just, in between matches, keep in a very protected plexiglass room, a conservatory showroom, if necessary, then it was him, because the merest little bit of hurt to Ilian lets in the clown. There was a great, not to go back to hammering Garcia, but the Argentinian papers, they said they lashed into him saying he was as good as guaranteeing a goal for the opposition. And they said he did pull off that one save in the first half, but then the actual phrase was, bah. But then his stunt double must have taken over for the second half. They had absolutely no compulsion in saying that he was absolutely useless and predictably so. And I don't want him to play against Brighton, because it means that they'll probably score. They're good at creating long shot opportunities, it says here, and attacking down the right.
Near post opportunities. Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting seeing this one, because we have had... we do now have arrested Stuart Dallas and Matthias Klick.
Luke Ayling as well.
So that might help.
And they will have had, three games in a week, one of which went to extra time.
And Pat Bamford, of course, has also had arrest, and he never gets a break, does he? So, and he does a huge amount of running.
We win this. We bounce back from the Crawley thing and we win this.
I think so.
Oh, we were all dead confident about Crawley, weren't we?
Yeah, but you know, being wrong before will be wrong again, but we're going to win this.
But fated to it. I mean, the confidence before Crawley was always paper thin, because as soon as they scored, it wasn't like a surprise, was it? It was
just, well, as soon as those halftime subs were made, yeah, it was a bit...
It was very 50-50. It was like, well, we should win this, but the confidence was only that far. Whereas with this, I think we can probably go 3 or 4 goals down and I would still think we'll be coming back to win. That's how confident I am about beating Brighton.
Back to the Premier League, the thing that we're sorting out. We're here to sort it out this year, aren't we? Because we've realised how bad a product it is. I think the Premier League have realised how bad a product it is. They welcomed us back with open arms to fix it. And we're here to offer advice in that direction in what's wrong with the Premier League. So what is wrong with the Premier League this week? I'm so glad to see it back, by the way.
Yeah, the FA Cup's worse, isn't it? Whatever about awful, the Premier League is.
Awful.
Our FA Cup record, we didn't even touch on just how bad it is. Just saw some discussion of it this week, and it is abysmal.
Abysmal, isn't it?
It's, yeah. For the size of club we are, for how bad we've been at it for basically the whole time the club has existed, is laughable.
I mentioned this in my YEP column today, Tuesday, so by the time this is out, you've missed it, so I'm not plugging anything. The 1950s, we were knocked out in the third round 10 seasons in a row, and that included 3 consecutive home draws against Cardiff, and they won 2-1 every time.
Just wasting everyone's time in it, aren't we, more or less?
Should we do what Man United did? Was it the millennium year when they went off, buggered off to Brazil? Could we, when we were allowed to go on holiday again, just go off on holiday and just forfeit it? Give the players a week off or whatever?
Might as well. Save the embarrassment, doesn't it? Anyway, what's wrong with the Premier League?
This has been on your mind for a while, hasn't it?
I'm upset about this, but I think it's probably more your problem, Michael. As the man who likes to keep a close handle on the purse strings, it's something I noticed, and I noticed it at the West Brom away game, but it started to pop up on other televised games. The advertising boards around the pitch, the things that they are advertising, that's what's wrong with the Premier League.
Do you have a moral problem with betting adverts?
No, fine about gambling. It's actually the fashion brands, Balenciaga.
I thought because it was you were referring to Michael, it was the hair replacement.
Well, no, because I wondered what Balenciaga was, so I Googled it, and then we've been exchanging messages about this since, because it's a ludicrous fashion brand, isn't it?
It's clothes.
It?
It's like Matalan.
It's like a very, very expensive Matalan is Balenciaga. If you're not familiar with it, Calvin is wearing a lot of it in the Take Us Home Season 2 around the promotion celebrations, I noticed, since this one came to my attention. But it's just fucking outrageous, isn't it? Come on, Michael, get it off your chest.
It seems like a unique thing that the advertising around the pitch is advertising more or less exclusively to the men who have stood on the pitch, because it's only footballers I can imagine who would be willing to spend. For example, you know the rubber key rings you get? It'll say like Scarborough, like Mallorca, yeah. Something like that.
Cut out in the shape of the letters, and event you have it in your pocket. Oh, Moscow's got one, look. Oops.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I've had that for about probably 15 years. It's a picture of a little football player, and underneath it says Daniel.
That's my name.
It's got a little ball.
Little rubber thing.
But what you find with those is, as well, because they're just made out sort of rubberized or whatever, either the clasp will give way where it joins the rubber, or the rubber will eventually snap through torsion in your pocket, won't it?
Not this one. Built to last, mate. Built to last.
But for example, the Balenciaga one of those, I mean, how much would you have paid for that?
£1, £2.
£2. So you might get one free off a 2p machine. If you're on the coins at the seaside, there'll be one of them.
That's not free. Is it when you've put about 20 quid in there trying to get out whatever you're buying up?
20 quid would be a very, very expensive keyring.
And that'd be a full day of entertainment at the slot machine. It's not called a slot machine, is it?
Penny arcades.
The 2p chomper.
And if it kept Michael's dreadful children quiet for a bit, he'd be happy.
How much is this keyring anyway? Come on.
£175.
It's a lot of money.
If you want some of the other products on offer, there's one, it's a plain black t-shirt on the front, but it's got a Balenciaga logo. And part of the thing with their logo is it's terrible. Like, it's basically like a Times New Roman font or something that they've written it in. And then underneath, just a few little lines. And then they put it in big on the back. But it makes you look like you're working in like a mobility company showroom or something. It's got that kind of vibe of like a crap workshop that you provided with.
My stepbrother, you know, the Man United fan, he sells chairlifts that go up and down stairs to old people. He's a granny robber, to all intents and purposes.
A scum fan and a grabby and, granny
yeah,
robber.
Well, a terrible human. Wayne
Rooney's dream job.
I could imagine him poncing around the showroom in a polo shirt with this embroidered on his tip.
£425 for that. One of the more baffling ones is that you can get a lanyard, and on the lanyard is a fake pass.
Yeah. So imagine if you were trying to get access, AAA access backstage to an event or whatever.
Balenciaga event.
Yeah, you might wear one of these around your neck, mate, and you're like, there's the lanyard, which then has a little clip on it and is attached in a little loop on the pass. But what does this get you access to?
Nothing.
How much is it?
It's a playful recreation of a backstage pass. The sort of thing you could knock out on you can get a printer that prints these things out, which is how they give them out, obviously, for events. How much is it?
It's £350 for a fake work pass type thing. Sort of thing you'd be issued with on your first day at a new job. You know, they're like, here you go, registration number for your car in there. Here's your pass. That can get you into these bits of the building. One of them, but £350 gets you nowhere. Maybe gets you a chat with someone incredibly pretentious.
So for the cost of half a season ticket, which gets you into, I mean, obviously when COVID is passed, it will get you into, you know, 19 Premier League, the best league in the world, so they say, even though we know there's plenty wrong with it. Top level football, that's what your £700 will get you into. You know, you get to sit in your seat, jaws all year. You can renew it for the year after, probably at a slight discount. That gets you nowhere.
I mean, we should say it's not our business what footballers spend their money on. They're earning it. They can do what they want. I just find it personally,
it's an affront.
Ridiculous.
It is. It's a confusing world, but you almost, I mean, stuff like this, you can almost ignore the price tags because ordinary people aren't spending the money on it, so it's fine. If footballers want to spend £500 on a fucking lanyard, it's their problem.
I've got to say, fair play to the lads at Balenciaga for doing this. Well, they're having a good laugh with it, aren't they?
I was reading Season Zine is an excellent publication about football, but is superb on the crossover into fashion because it's edited by Felicia Pennant, who works within the fashion industry. And their latest issue, which just came out, dropped recently, does actually deal with the Balenciaga, their football collection, because as part of their Autumn Winter 20 collection, they sent models down the catwalk in their recreated football kits that Balenciaga have produced, and their boots as well. You can get a pair of all black Balenciaga football boots, which have the molded studs underneath and are designed to be worn on the street. They're £425 if you want to.
And they look, it's worth saying, they look like the cheapest trainers you can buy in Sports Direct. They've got that Lonsdale vibe about them.
But the where Season Zine always excels and why I value reading it is because they take it seriously. So they have a feature with people, football fans and also fashion industry people. Neil Hurd, for example, who did the excellent book about football shirts and now works for Melba, who made those Barcelona kits. I think he does their design work now. Basically saying, are these kits good or not? Is it a good collection or not? And they made a very good point, which kind of loops around to what you're saying, that they're selling really to nobody. These football shirts that they've made, they're an admirable rip-off of Borussia Dortmund's kind of retro 90s kits that are quite popular, and you'd maybe pay £80 or something if you were into that world that you wanted retro football kits.
I sold one on Depop for £80 not long ago.
There you go. They're selling them for about £350, but they're marketing them, as you said, to footballers who essentially can get all the football gear that they want for nothing. So there's just like, there's not a market. And also that the other side of these that they pointed out in Season is that they're kind of, it's not only, the downside is it's not necessarily just the cash that they're taking out of footballers' pockets for this. It's also nicking the kind of the street style and retro football movement that has been growing for a while. And they're kind of saying like, yeah, this is just a logical progression. Of course, at some point they were going to just rip off the fact that genuinely cool people have been wearing Borussia Dortmund kits for about 5 years. Of course, they're going to just knock out a fucking £500 version of it and send people down the catwalk in them.
Saying it looks ridiculous. Saying it looks like a Borussia Dortmund kit as well is massively overselling it, because it looks to me like the sort of kit I wore when I used to play like under-15s football in the 90s. It's a Pro Star kit as opposed to like a Nike or an Umbro or an Adidas one.
That was the one. There was some detail in what was reading about kind of they named the original designers who brought this particular style in and found the threads of old kits that they've actually involved in all these, and saying that it's actually also, as well as being a fairly ridiculous theft of a street movement, like quite a bad interpretation of what was good classic design, like the fact that you would look back at those kits and go and want to rip them off, speaks to the original designs, whereas this is just kind of, it's a pretty poor version. They did point out that walking down the street in football boots is not much more more ridiculous than high heels. So maybe there is something to that. It's equally difficult.
Lads,
I speak from experience.
I've had a thought. Have you seen the Stone Island ripoff in the Leeds United shop?
Did you do her own range?
I'm going to say, if Balenciaga come in next year to replace Adidas and it means that that thing gets taken out of the shop, I'm all for it. Charge £1,000 a shirt.
I thought you were thinking we should do a spin-off range of T-shirts that are like 800 quid and just try and market them to the footballers.
Definitely sell them to those mugs.
In fact, the squad did all get a copy of the Campion special, didn't they? Missed a chance there. We could have advertised some 600 quid lanyards. They'd have always had one.
If you feel like you've overpaid for your fashion brands, then get in touch with Levi. No, Levi Solicitors are on board with the podcast and New Year. A lot of people doing a lot of house moving at the minute. If you are in that particular boat, because it is like Right Moves' busiest time of the year, give Levi's a shout for your conveyancing. Please do. And get your 10% discount through Going For Us. And sort yourself out a will at the same time. Speaking to the guys at Levi's, they do say, they can't stress it enough, get your will sorted if you own property or if you are in the process of moving house. Vitally important that you have an up-to-date will. Again, 10% discount available on all of that at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. End bit of the podcast is heroes and villains, good and bad from the last 7 days. The Ken Bates Villainy Award, Kiko Casilla.
Yep.
Are we just giving it him?
It's an option. It will shorten this section of the podcast. But yeah, he's got to have a nomination, hasn't he? Because he's done, isn't he?
It wasn't even his worst game, really, was it? It's just so tiring.
Having to see him.
Yeah, just sick of him being around. As I said before, he's like an ill wind that blows nobody any good. But that's the point of that phrase is that somebody gets some good out of it. He's just wind. And even wind is useful. He couldn't power a windmill. Windmill would probably fall over.
And his beard shit too.
Fine. Do we want to nominate some of the other senior players? Because we can't leave them out of it, because they were in part responsible for the shambles at Crawley. I'm thinking Pablo Hernandez, sick of him.
Not good enough.
Costa.
Yeah.
Calvin.
Sincerely, maybe not good enough there.
Calvin.
Not good enough.
And Alioski.
Ah, he's all right.
He did okay, didn't he? He got angry, and that was more than a lot of the others did, try to fight some Crawley players at the end. And
on reflection as well, I had a bit of a go at Phillips for their opening goal, but I think it was, I'm going to blame a child now, I think it might have been Ollie Casey's fault, because it was Calvin's man, then Ollie Casey came charging across as if he was going to tackle him, and then decided not to, and it meant no one did, and they scored.
Blame a child.
But they should all be better, and so should Bielsa, because those substitutions were shit too. So, resign. Resign now!
Still not the worst substitution though, was it? Because that was Mark Wright. He can be nominated as a villain.
Fulfilling a lifelong dream.
That did just make the whole thing so tawdry. I know it is kind of a patronising subplot of the FA Cup third round, but you are normally looking for that kind of some romance, something nice. It's like, oh, well, you know, at least the plucky team won in that thing. You know,
the postman scored or whatever.
Yeah. And
oh, they brought on a multimillionaire because he wants to be on telly. Exactly. Oh, what a lovely story.
It feels
for his documentary. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And he stole the headlines. And do you know what? All credit to Crawley Town for the job they did on us, which was fantastic.
We had it on here, the tweet that he posted and then deleted, where it was about
never let anyone tell you can't do something. It's like, well,
and weren't those the words? I was sure and I couldn't find it, and I'm so I may be speaking completely out of turn, but I heard the post-match interview with their opening goal scorer who had been let go by Tottenham.
He's a crying child, was it?
Yeah, and he'd been in a car crash and spent a year out of the game and he came back, and I'm sure those were his words, and he said that, and he's like, this just proves you shouldn't let anybody tell you I remember it vividly. He said, it just shows you can come back from anything. And then this fucking clown.
You can come back from a jungle. You can come back from Strictly Come Dancing.
You can come back from an incredibly successful television career that has made you a millionaire, and you can still do it. And I think that might be why he's deleted. I wonder if that guy, who is actually a proper footballer, said to him, oh, you fucking joker, you're pissing off next week. Don't be nicking like my heartfelt quotes from my interview for your pissy little documentary.
And also, while we're on Mark Wright, the people who congratulated him were included John Terry and Eddie Hearn. I think Eddie Hearn and Mark Wright are basically the same person anyway, in my head. I struggle to really separate them. Cheeky geezers, aren't they?
Tiresome.
Tiresome geezers.
Let's nominate Marine as well for not doing the graceful thing and beating Spurs.
It was all set up for them. It's not that hard. Spurs aren't that great. I know we didn't beat them, but Marine.
Let's nominate Spurs as well for not letting Marine beat them.
It would have been the decent thing to do. Yeah. I did enjoy hearing on the commentary that Radio 5 were behind the goal. But that one was their commentary position, which is pleasantly old school. The first time Leeds United were on Match of the Day, it was filmed from behind the cop.
Well, if Jonathan Pearce had been behind the goal, we'd have had a full breakdown of commentary positions behind the goal since 1946.
Pearce and his idiot sidekick need to be in this as well. Absolutely ruined what was already a horrible... I might have been able to put up with it if I'd had the dulcet tones of a reasonable commentator who merely tells me who has got the ball and who they're kicking it to. That's fine. Jonathan Pearce, I said it all on the Match Ball, but you know why he's here.
Have you ever had like candle wax poured into your ears? No?
No.
It's supposed to be like one of those holistic therapies, isn't it? This is what I imagine it would be like.
Okay.
Yeah. Hot wax tipped into your eardrums would probably have been more fun than listening to Jonathan Pearce and Martin Keown. That's what the point I was making.
Whatever gets you off.
Have you ever had lavender oil massaged into your buttocks?
Into your inner thighs.
Have you ever had a German businessman piss on you? No, me neither. But yeah, Martin Keown should only be welcome at RFA Cup ties if someone is going to twat a football at his head.
What happened to Alioski should happen to him all the time.
Well, every time he leaves his house.
Quick nod in the direction of Gabby Agbonlahor. Just ignore him.
We're going to mention it here because...
Ignore him.
Because he doesn't listen to this and it's not in public and so he won't get anything out of it. But yeah, just ignore him. Yeah.
And definitely don't DM him racist abuse.
No, yeah. That should have been top of the list, really.
Anybody. Don't DM anybody. Yes. In fact, don't racially abuse anybody. Yeah. All these things, don't do those things.
It's not hard to not racially abuse someone, you know that.
And it's really easy to ignore Gabby Agbonlahor. Mm. Like, there's absolutely no requirement for anybody to reply to him.
And do you know what happens if
and
you
I know
ignore
how
him?
Much of a hypocrite that makes me for banging on about Jason Pearce. Jonathan Pearce.
Again.
But it's not going to end up with me sending abusive messages to either of them. Because I don't care that much. I can vent here.
Do you know what happens if you ignore Agbonlahor? Nothing. It actually diminishes his career opportunities to do this.
Exactly. So don't reply to any of his tweets. Certainly with abuse,
mute
but just
him.
Not at all.
Just mute him, block him.
You don't have to listen to him. We didn't have a choice with we did have a choice with Jonathan Pearce, could have turned the volume down, but to hear the commentary, he was there. Whereas Agbonlahor, he's very peripheral. He's not really actually in anybody's life unless you let him in.
Someone even more peripheral who I want to add to tag on to this as well is that he appeared on the podcast when we played Chelsea. I never heard of him until recently.
Rob Conlon.
Now he's everywhere. That Rory bloke who does Chelsea things.
Oh, he's so wet.
He's basically been doing the same joke all season now, which is when we lose, he does a thing of it saying, but didn't Bielsa do well every time we lose? It's become like it's his one joke now that he does over and over again, and he's everywhere. And again, just block him.
Although
it's
the problem is, we do have an entire feature based on listening to these people. So,
and we do often engage with these people early on in the hoo-ha.
We do mention them right now in the Villainy Award as well. So we're not don't do as we say. No, yeah, do
but
as
we're
we
not
do.
Interacting with them. That's the difference.
Slagging them off in there.
You can slag people off behind their backs. That's what you should do. That's what I was taught as a kid.
It's what people did before social media.
It's the brave thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
When they come
in a room, just, all right, Gabby.
There's a strong argument, you know, everybody in America is complaining about being kicked off Twitter. Just go back to what we used to do, write letters. If you're that annoyed, write an angry letter. Poison pen.
Post shit to Martin Keown. Brainstorming ideas here.
Yeah, it's good how we're trying to inspire people to a more civilised discourse and we've arrived at the idea of dog shit through a letterbox.
If it's Martin Keown's civilized. Letterbox, though... That's fine, isn't it?
Flaming dog shit.
You're probably better off leaving it on his doorstep like it's a parcel, ringing the doorbell, and then when he comes out to get it, drop kicking a ball into his face. And that, I think, is the way that we will move conversation on and we'll reach a more civilised level of discourse.
You're right. Pick yourself a Ken Bates villain of the week.
Mark Wright. Let's give it a whim.
Yeah, why not? Or Jason Pearce. Given you keep mentioning him.
And Mark Wright, just for stealing a young man's dream.
Mark Wright and his Cockney chums, Cockney Essex chums.
The whole thing.
Tiresome.
There's some sympathy for Crawley having their big day stolen by this clown, but they let it happen. So them as well, Mark Wright and Crawley.
They are prostitutes to fate, aren't they?
Very good, yeah.
Thank you. Quite profound. I didn't mean it to be. What about the Andy Hughes Hero Award for this week? Anyone? Anything?
Ian Pervader did a nutmeg. That was all I could think of.
It was a flip-flap, wasn't it? Flip-flap.
It went through someone's legs.
But he flip-flapped.
He flip-flapped before. It as well. A flip-flap nutmeg. That was nice.
All the lads who didn't play, they did well.
Dallas
Ayling, Click, Melier, Bamford, a lot of them had a fine weekend.
They did.
Can't fault their effort. A great bunch of lads. Unless they come into the Brighton game and we lose with them in the side, in which case we will lash into them even stronger.
We can't even suggest playing the kids now either, can we? Because we've established they're all rubbish.
Get Mark Jackson in, play Cirencio Somerville.
And an honourable mention as well for Saul Bamba. He's not done any heroics for us directly this week, but we want to send, you know, love and positivity and good thoughts to him. And he did chase Belewski around the car park. So
I'm frankly happy to give it to Saul Bamba.
For that alone?
Yeah. I know it's not this week, but, you know.
And it'll do fuck all to help, but...
Cheer him up, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it'll probably be more useful than Sharon Warnock's second-hand wigs.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
Just parcel... If anybody's got any useless crap... that they want rid of the house. It's been quite difficult with all the tips closed. Put it in a box, send it to Saul Bamba and tell him, I hope this broken vacuum cleaner cheers you up and helps you.
My vacuum cleaner did break fairly recently.
I'll send it to Saul.
Well, it was Henry, you know, the little Henry one.
Well, he'll have a nice smiley face on it. He'll be glad to see that.
I took him to the tip and he was smiling to the very end, so better play to
him.
Better play to him.
But yeah, if you've got like just a pile of old wood in your garden, maybe left over from you building a fence, send it to Saul. Yes.
Send it to Saul. There's the campaign name. No, good luck, Saul Bamba. We hope you get better soon and you can come back and send all this stuff back to everybody.
And he can be the hero this week because there's nobody else.
It was
even comes close.
A fallow week. Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up there then and just point you in the direction of TSB Plus, our new subscription package. If you're not yet on board with that, ad-free podcasts, all of them, and you get early access to the Match Ball as well. And you'll be able to enjoy our post-match glee when we slaughter Brighton at the weekend. Full digital access to the magazine, daily email from Moscow and plenty more. Have a look at thesquareball.net/plus. That's us out of here. We'll see you next time.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.